Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National All VR call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, July 14th, 2015. I would now like to hand the call over to Ms. Regina Broughton, the Office of Ticket Operation and Provider Support. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for joining us today. We have a full agenda ahead of us and a lot of good information to share with you. Briefly, we're going to cover just some general announcements, and then we'll cover our cost reimbursement update, our ticket portal update, and then we have a special treat. We have guests from Iowa who will talk to you about the Partnership Plus in Iowa. So I'll just go ahead and get started. The first general announcement that I have is in reference to the temporary suspension of the eQuip system. The eQuip system, of course, is the it's an OPM system that's used to – it's a web-based platform that's used to complete and submit background investigation forms. As we understand, we have about 9 VRs who are still not approved for the portal. OPM has temporarily taken down the eQuip system, and this is offline for security enhancement. We understand that it could be offline for 4 to 6 weeks while these security enhancements are implemented. There is a website that we will make available to you, and if you want additional information about the eQuip system and any updates that OPM provides. But again, this is out of our hands, and this is something that is under the control of OPM. So we're going to go ahead and jump into our agenda today, and I'm going to turn it over to Danielle, who will give you an update on cost reimbursements. Danielle?
Hello, everyone. For the month of June 2015, we allowed 1,395 claims, and we cleared 2,121 claims. That currently has us at a pending of a little over 1,000 claims. With that, one thing I wanted to let everybody know, we are going through trying to get that down as well while continuing to process the cases that you're sending in. You may, within the next coming week or so, get contacted from the VR staff asking you to resubmit certain SSNs. And that may be some pages are missing, something didn't come through on the fax. Just to follow up with you to make sure that we get everything that we show is pending processed for you as soon as possible. So just look out for that. If you do see those requests, that's what it's for.
Okay, thanks, Danielle. Desley is scheduled to be here on next, but she to give you an update on the portal, but Des isn't here, so I have some figures that I want to share with you. And this is in reference to enrollment in the portal. You know, the portal went live on June the 15th, and right now we have 633 individuals, users in the portal. We have 335 ENs enrolled in the portal and 57 VRs. Just to give you information, ticket assignment and unassignment in the portal is a 3,162, and payments, we have, these are payment work cases that have been created via the portal, and this is 4,763. So that's just an update on some numbers for the portal and the users. The only other update that I have, and then I'll turn it over to Katie, is in reference to the potential payment report.
Now, last March, when we withdrew the QBER, which is the Quarterly Benefits Earnings Report, we said that in the absence of QBER, we would notify you of quarterly of cases in which you may qualify for a cost reimbursement payment.
This is essentially a heads up, and we're happy to begin that new service. Last week, we sent to you the encrypted quarterly potential payment report. And then after we sent the report, we assigned and communicated a PIN separately. This PPR, or the Potential Payment Report, that's a teaser, PPR, alerts you that individuals to whom you have provided VR services might potentially qualify you for a cost reimbursement payment based on the earnings. To qualify for the payments, though, you must submit a payment claim that we determine also meets all of the non-earnings-related payment criteria. This was the case with the old Cubrafile also. So, again, you should have received your report and the PIN. So we hope that this report is useful to you. If you have any questions about the report, you can let us know, and you can contact us at the VR Help Desk, and that address is vr.helpdesk@ssa.gov. Okay. At the end, we'll have it open for questions.
Sure. Hi, everyone. It's Raquel. I see a lot of people are asking about the PPR report and the email. If you did not receive the PPR, send an email, as Regina just said, to the VR Help Desk, and we will make sure, or if the wrong person received the email, just let me or whoever the VR Help Desk know who you want to receive the report on a monthly basis, and we'll make sure we change that email address for you.
Thanks, Raquel. Okay, now I'm going to turn it over to Katie. Katie Streibringer. Katie, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Katie's going to give a ticket portal update.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm going to do an overview of some functionality in the ticket portal that will help you do your business. I want to go over individual ticket assignments, batch ticket assignments, how to update closure statuses, any ticket assignment errors you may get, and some general information to help you. I do want to point out that we realize that some of you are not able to access the portal yet. We will be, you know, trying to accommodate you through the processes we have in place until you can get into the portal. And everything I'm going to go through here on the slides is in the user guide. If you have not had a chance to get the user guide, we have instructions for how to access the secure site where the user guide is stored, and you would have gotten that in the welcome email if you are registered for the portal. So once again, everything I'm going to cover here is in the user guide. I just want to give everyone some information here all at one time, and we are going to take questions at the end. Next slide, please. The first thing I'm going to cover is individual ticket assignments. From the main menu, you're going to navigate to the individual ticket status and use history page by clicking on the Check Assignability by SSN link from the main menu. You can see the red arrow here on the screen. Next slide. The check Assignability page allows you to check the assignability of a single Social Security number. You have to enter an SSN to review the ticket status and use history. This screen is also the first step for assigning to new tickets. It's not going to let you assign a ticket until you do the verification that the ticket is assignable. Next slide, please. So you're going to enter the SSN and click Search. This is the first half of the screen. You'll see information like the ticket number, when it was mailed, whether or not the ticket is currently in use. And by in use, we mean has CDR protection, whether the ticket's terminated, and if there have been any ticket payments. It will also indicate if there were earnings in the last 24 months. Next slide, please. You'll also see, just to clarify also, earnings in the last 24 months will give you some general information. It'll tell you how many months they had at trial work only level, if that's the only level they achieved, the number of months at SGA or better, and if there were no earnings that reached trial work level. If the ticket was previously assigned to another EN or VR, you can see that here on the screen in that box. And then if the ticket is assignable, you will see two buttons appear here, open a VR case and assign a ticket. You want to select open a VR case for your VR cost reimbursement cases. Assigning a ticket will put it under the milestone outcome program for the ticket to work payment side. So you want to use open a VR case for your case opening. Next slide, please. And then you can see here the screen side by side. I need you a little more information. If you click the first button, you open a VR case, you will be taken to the open a VR case screen. This is another indication of what you've chosen. If you did not mean to click open a VR case, you can click cancel and go back out. You're going to enter either the assignment date or the case opening date, and you do need to provide the first and last name that matches our record. If the name is incorrect, it will not let you go any further. Next slide, please. The next thing I want to cover is individual ticket assignment. Next slide, please. The way the portal is set up, you can work on actions for a ticket or a beneficiary based on one of two lists, if you see in the top here of the screen. There's the list beneficiaries currently assigned to me or list beneficiaries formerly assigned to me. So all of your beneficiaries that you have ever worked with will be on one of these two lists. So the action we're going to do now is to unassign a ticket. So you're going to click on the top link, List Beneficiaries Currently Assigned to Me. Next slide, please. You're going to look for the person's name on the left here, which is blurred out. And if you see next to each person, you can tell when it was assigned to you, the payment method, V being cost reimbursement, M being milestone outcomes of the ticket program, and O is also a possible option. If there have been any claim months paid here in that column, that is for EN ticket payments. The VR payments are not in the system yet. That will be sometime in the spring. So this is giving you EN payment information. And it will tell you if it was paid to you or someone else or if there are no payments yet. And then what I want you to do to unassign a ticket, you're going to click on the Actions menu on the very right-hand side next to that beneficiary's name. Next slide, please. So you're going to bring up the More Actions menu. And as you see here, these are all the actions you can take for this beneficiary. You will have options on the screen relevant to the beneficiary you clicked on. Since this case is currently assigned, you have the option on the bottom, unassign or close the case. We're going to select that option. Next slide, please. So if you choose close the VR case and the case is currently assigned to you with a V, you'll see the close VR case screen. You're going to put the case closure date, and you're going to indicate whether or not the case was successfully closed. If you're unassigning the ticket, then it's going to prompt you for the ticket unassignment date, and you need to put in the requester for the ticket unassignment. Once you hit submit, this beneficiary is no longer assigned to you. This is happening in real time. The beneficiary will move from the list of beneficiaries currently assigned to you, that top link, and will go to the list of beneficiaries formerly assigned to you. Next slide, please. And now I'm going to show you how to update the individual closure status. Next slide, please. So you're updating a closure status for a closed case. You're going to navigate to the second link there, List Beneficiaries Formerly Assigned to Me. Next slide, please. As you see here, this lists all the beneficiaries formerly assigned to you. You're going to pick a person because you're updating the closure code who is assigned with the type of V. If you click on the Actions menu, which is, once again, on the right, both screens are very similar. So once you learn how one screen works, it follows through. Excuse me. Next slide, please. So you see here there aren't as many options because the ticket has been unassigned. You're going to see the option there, Update VR Closure Status. Next slide, please. From there, you can see the date it was opened, the date it was closed, and then you can click the radio button that pertains to the case, either successfully or unsuccessfully closed, and click Submit. Next slide, please. And now we'll update the closure status. If you go to Check Assignability by SSN and type in the SSN, you will see that the closure status has been updated for that ticket. All right, the next thing I want to go over are ticket assignment errors that you may get. And the first thing that has happened is someone has assigned tickets incorrectly using the wrong option. Because you can, you know, accidentally assign a case when you mean to open a case or open a case when you mean to assign it, there is a way for you yourself to fix this without having to contact any help desk or support. Next slide, please. If you accidentally assigned a ticket instead of opening a case or vice versa, you can change this from the beneficiaries currently assigned to me main menu. Click on that top right, please. The next slide. And you see here, like, for instance, the case on top, that came in as it was V, and perhaps you meant to make it an M, or you meant to make a case that was an M, a V. You just go to the Actions menu next to the beneficiary. Next slide, please. And you'll see the option on the bottom, Convert Ticket to VR Case or Convert VR Case to Ticket. There are some rules here. You cannot convert a VR case to a ticket after 90 days. That 90-day rule still applies. But instead of having to notify someone about changing it for you, you can change it here in the system. You can convert a ticket to a VR case at any time as long as there have not been any ticket payments. So as long as that option shows up in the More Actions menu, that option is available for you to convert the case. Next slide, please. And as you will see, it gives you some information, and then you hit submit, and it changes the case to the proper method. Next slide, please. And now I'm going to go over the batch ticket assignment. Next slide, please. If you see here in the middle, this is a new option that was recently deployed, is this is where you are going to upload the batch files. Right now, many of you are using MOVEit to submit the files to Maximus. Our plan is for you to use this screen and the portal to upload the files yourself. Now, I do want to stress, if you, I believe Maximus is up to date processing all the June in-use files, but if you have not received confirmation that your file is complete and received the results back, please do not use this to process your July files until your June files are complete. So now I'm going to go over how you're going to do this. Next slide, please. All right, so you're going to have three choices of the type of files to upload. Your in-use files are going to be option number one there on the screen, legacy VR open closed VR case file. That is the type you are going to want to use. If you use type two, you will end up assigning these tickets, and that is not what you want to do if you are planning to upload your case opening. Now, the first thing you have to do is you have to enter a unique identifier for the request. It is a one-time unique identifier. And for your own purposes, it will probably be easier if you come up with a system, you know, so you have a unique identifier that you associate with your file. Once you use it, you can't reuse it again. You can only use numbers and uppercase letters. You know, you can try going through the alphabet for a while, but as you run out, you may have some new system. We are not really tracking that anywhere, so don't worry about it being anything meaningful. It's just something for you that's a unique identifier that we can keep track of everything. So you're going to click the type one here, legacy VR open case close file, open close VR case file, excuse me. And you're going to browse to the file that you want to upload. And then you also have a radio button. If you see their email notification, if you change that to yes, you will receive a notification when your file has been uploaded and the results are ready for you to see. Next slide, please. If you've used the previous portal to perform batch ticket assignments and unassignments, then you do not need to make any changes to use the file uploads in the ticket portal. Besides one, the ticket portal does not allow TXT files. You're going to have to convert your TXT files to CSV files, and you can do that just by changing the extension of your file. You do not need to convert it or use any software. You just need to take a TXT file and make it a CSV file, and that is the security requirement of the portal. When you upload these files, you may see different results for your ticket assignments, because we are not going to be manipulating the date that you enter. The date you put as the IPE date here, if you see on the screen, we're showing an example, as the first row, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, that SSN there on the right. The IPE date for this assignment is July 1st, 2012. If you submit that date and that date is taken by the system, that is the date that is going to be put, the ticket is going to be put in use. Even though that ticket is more than 90 days old, we will not be converting that date to a date 90 days from now. So once again, we are not doing any data manipulation, which is a change for how the processing is going to work. And just so you know, the ticket is not assignable on the date you submit it as the IPE date. The ticket will not be assigned. Unlike the current process, which looks for the most next available date and changes the date you provide and puts another date in the system, that is not going to happen. If the ticket is not assignable July 1st, 2012, the ticket will not be put in use. Next slide, please. The next, the link under the link you went to do the uploads will show you the file processing status of uploads in the last 30 days. This is an example of what that screen looks like. That will show you all of the files uploaded within the last 30 days. You have the date, receipt date, which is the date was uploaded to the portal. The file ID is the ID that you came up with in order to upload the file. The file type are those files in that drop-down. File type 1 is the putting cases in use. The person who uploaded it, how many rows were in the file, the processing status, the completed date when the file was actually completed and uploaded by our system. If you have a large file, it can take a little longer than the time you submitted it. If there were any errors, they are displayed here. And if the file is ready to be downloaded, it will have a status of ready. Already means it's already the value below ready here on the screen. It means someone has already downloaded it once before. Next slide, please. And I wanted to give you a little detail here. There has been a change from the report that you are going to get back. You are not going to have a header row. And this is just an example of here of what the file will look like. Excuse me. Also, the leading zeros are not going to be there on the file because this is a CSV file. Next slide, please. And I'm just going to read you a few things on the screen here without having to read you every bullet. The name of the analysis file that's returned will be different. I know you're used to the naming convention, and then the file you get back has the same convention. It is going to give it a unique name here, but you can always change that name if you need to change the file name for the way you are keeping your file. One restriction is column E. If you have experience with this file before, it cannot include special characters that are restricted. This is listed in full detail in the user guide. And once again, I do want to point you towards the user guide for any questions about how to process these files. This is just an overview or a highlight. The user guide has all the details and all the instructions. And if you do have further questions, please contact the VR help desk, and they will route you to someone who can give you further details about how this should work and how you can process these files. We are here to help you and support you, and we want to make sure that you are able to use the portal to process your files. Next slide, please. And once again, we're going to hold questions and answers until the end. So I'm going to give it back to Michelle.
Katie, hi. Thank you so much. And you, as we did for the all-EN call, we'll take a few calls now prior to our effective practice presentation. I know that we have one question from the chat line we want to go ahead and bring to your attention. Anna, you want to read that?
Yeah, the question is specifically about the cleanup files. The VR is inquiring if they are going to be included in the ticket portal.
No, the cleanup files are not in the ticket portal, and they are not going to be included in the ticket portal. The ticket portal only includes assignments and that were processed in our system, and those were never in SSA's system.
Okay. And I guess a lot of ticket coordinators made the comment that they did not receive the PPR report, or the PP report. So they are asking if it can be resent to them directly and also the email with the PIN information.
Right. Based off of the comments that we've gotten out the chat line, it appears as though it went to the signature authority versus the ticket coordinator. Is that correct, Anna?
Right. Yeah. It went to the signatory authority on the record, and once again, if they contact the VR help desk, they can make sure the file is provided to them or reset.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Operator, let's open up the phone line. We'll take three questions and then move it into our effective practice presentation. Do you want to open the lines, please, operator?
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the pound key. One moment for your first question. Your first question is from the line of Nina Mays.
Hi, Nina. This is Michelle. Please share with us your question. Hello, are you there?
I'm here, but I didn't assign a question.
Oh, okay. Thank you for calling.
Please move on.
All right, will do. Operator, do we have our next caller?
Yes, your next caller is from the line of David Leong.
Hi, David.
Hi. How are you?
Thank you.
So I really need to understand what we can do for the anywhere from 50 to 150 cases in each file I send that are transition cases that did not have benefits on the date the IPE was signed that I find out have a ticket and were being placed in use automatically. This has a huge impact on us. I need to know what the answer is and how I know to change the date of a case from the date listed to a new date. I'd also like to know what the zero code is. You said you were going to go over that, and I missed it if we did. But the more important piece is those transition cases and other clients who begin receiving services without benefits but who have applied, what is going to come back to let me know to change the date? And if I have to manually change the date on anywhere from 15 to 20,000 cases, that's an extraordinary amount of work.
Katie, do you want to address that?
I was trying to think of it. I want to give an answer that everyone can, they can help everyone, but I also want to work specifically with you on how to work that out. You know, we did just implement this process, and we are trying to work out the kinks and try to do something that will work for everyone. I completely understand trying to update 15,000 cases is not as easy as updating two. I believe the system is going to return a date that the ticket is assignable, and you would just need to change that date that you are submitting to the date that it is assignable. You know, the date that in column B that we've been calling the IPE date, that is a carryover from the legacy file, that is actually the date that you want to, you know, assign the case, open the case. As long as the IPE date, the date you sign the IPE is a valid, you know, that's your IPE date. We're not asking you to change the IPE date. But if, you know, you are working with that person and they are working with you and assignable, you know, and the date, we'll say, it, you know, the date it comes back is a couple months later, you can change that date to the date the ticket is assigning you, telling you that, you know, the person is actually has a ticket, because very often you are using dates before there is even a ticket. You know, we do want you to change that date that you send us from the IP, you know, keep your IP, don't change your IP, we're not asking you to change your IP date. Keep that date, but submit a different date in the system and use the date the system, the file should be giving you back a different date that you can use, which is pretty much what Maximus was doing. They were taking, you would submit a date that you open behind the IPE date, they would look for the first available date, and then they would use that date to assign the case in the system. With the way things are working with this new file upload, you yourself are going to have to change the date because we don't have a middle person or a middle system in the place of MaxStar that is doing that for you. That's what the current MOVEit process is doing, right? You're sending the files to Maximus. They're manipulating the data before they send it to SSA, and then they're giving you the file back. Does that help? And if you have specifics, please, you know, you can email me directly, katie.strivinger@ssa.gov. I do want to help everybody who needs help with this file, and I'll spell my name, K-A-T-I-E dot S-T-R-I-E
Binger at SSA.gov. And if you can't remember my email address, you can send it to the Fair Help Desk, and they will route it to me so we can help you get these files processed. Make you feel better at all?
Well, so to be clear, though, are they going to have a different code so I know that any that come back as, say, 17 are cases I need to look at the date and resubmit again with a new date? And that's part of what I'm trying to figure out is there's no indication from what came back when I was testing to know that any of those cases wouldn't have made it through and that I would have had to manipulate the data again and resubmit. So I'm trying, otherwise you're still asking me to manually look at 15,000 to 20,000 records in a file and be able to figure out where there looks like there might be a disconnect or discrepancy to send it back in.
I completely understand, and I will have to get back to you on the exact...
Because this is kind of, you know, a huge change, and I love how we get 10 minutes on a call to really even absorb what this might mean. It's not well handled, in my opinion.
Thanks, Katie. David, as Katie said, she's given you her email address, and then we have the help desk, but she'll work with you on an individual basis, okay? Thanks mm-hmm. a lot.
Your next question comes from the line of Annie Zofran.
Hi, Annie.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. My question has to do with the PPR. I received mine because it went to our commissioner, but then we ended up being able to get onto the email, and so I opened it today and basically found a list of 7,991 SSNs. So this report is not going to be useful to me, you know, obviously. Now, before when we had Cuber, I was able to take, say, the handful of people I had per month and feed it into there and find out if they had wages. These were all for people who I knew had moved out of state or were working for the federal government. I have access to all the Texas wages. I don't need any of that. Since this PPR is going to be utterly useless for me, what I'm looking for is a solution to really replace the Cuber. I mean, can I email somebody with a short list of SSNs and they can check for me or what? But I need to have that because I don't want to send in a bunch of claims that are just going to be denied, you know, just on a wing and a prayer, hoping that they have wages when I really have no clue if they have wages.
Thanks. I'll take that. This is Regina. The PPR, again, is a workaround for the Cuber because of PII concerns, we cannot give the earnings information. So the PPR is essentially a heads up. We look at the last 2 years to see if there are enough earnings to qualify, and then we send you these this heads up so that you would have to look at the Social Security number and determine the case open and closure dates and if there are and then have to locate the earnings. Essentially, that's all that we can do for now. You know, but this is a heads up. These are people that have earnings on the record, and we identify that as potential payments for you. But
right, the $8,000 is not going to help me at all. And besides, we have our tracker for Texas. We have a tracker that helps us coordinate the. You know, we send our files in to the Texas Workforce Commission, and they send us a list every quarter of the people who have made wages. So I don't need that list. I need access to a federal, and we're all remember now, we're all have clearance through the federal government in order to do this job. We should have access to something where we can look up the people we actually need to look up, which is the people who are working out of state or for the federal government. And as far as PII goes, we exchange PII every time we send in a claim.
I understand, but again, it mostly has to do with the earnings. It's information that we are no longer allowed to give. So,
and who made that rule?
That is an agency rule. You know,
so you guys made up that rule. Is that what you're saying?
No, we didn't make up the rule. It's earnings information that we in the past were giving it to you, but because of the PII concerns and so on, we're no longer at liberty to give out that earnings information. I have our Deputy Associate Commissioner here. Do you want to say something, Rob, to add to that?
Yeah, this is Rob.
So this is based on guidance from our Office General Counsel in the policy and disclosure of data that's derived from IRS information, essentially. We also had agreements in place and with, I believe it was child support, that helped us to obtain this information. And those agreements are in the process of being revised. They have an expiration date. Now, the previous version, from my understanding, and again, I'm coming into this at the most abstract level or the furthest from the inner workings of this, is that the type and nature of how we were going to use that information and the period of time for coverage, all that has come to fruition, and we are in the process of working on new agreements with the Office of Child Support. But in addition to that, the transfer of that information, we have been advised from our general counsel that releasing that information to a third party, we were advised not to continue to release that information. But we are continuing to identify what options we have internally in terms of disclosure issues and working with IRS to see how we can navigate through this. This current process that we have, I understand your point, we will continue to try to work around these issues and consult and give you something, attempt to at least work internally to give you something that will get us through this phase as we're going through this. But that's, I mean, what I know from my level at this particular time. That doesn't give you, what you're looking for, which is a quick, fix in terms of a specific solution right away. But that's the information that I know.
Okay, so to summarize all that, there might be something in the future. Is that what you're saying, or?
Well, we can certainly take it back and work the issue further and discuss what our options are internally, and we'd be willing to do that. We're trying. This is an attempt that we've made, and we'll go back and we'll discuss and see if we can make enhancements.
Well, that would be great, because the only other solution here is whenever I see anyone working out of state or for the federal government is for me to send in claims willy-nilly, and then that's going to affect our rate of reimbursement. So instead of my looking like 95% of my claims are regularly paid, I'll look like 72% of my claims are paid because, I'll get a ton of denials. There's no upside for us at all in this process right now.
I understand.
All right. So thanks.
Thank you. And Rob, thank you for coming on to our call. That's for right now. We are going to ask anyone and everyone who has questions about the ticket portal to please submit those through the VR help desk. We will continue this conversation next month. It'll be first on our agenda, and possibly even use many of the questions that we receive as a Q&A to do a follow-up on many of your concerns, as well as the uploading of the batch files. We know that's a new process. We have some just processes to work through. I want to thank Katie for all of her work on that and the revised handbook, which is available on our secure ticket portal for those of you who have not had access to that yet. That's where you can find it and find the information that Katie shared with us today. So thank you again for our speakers on that issue, Katie, Danielle, and Regina. At this time, it's with our great pleasure to share with you our Iowa Partnership Plus presentation. We definitely are going to shorten it just a little bit so we can end our call can end at a little after 4. But we are excited about many of the grassroots efforts that Iowa has put in place for their Partnership Plus. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Leslie Barrett, who'll do an intro, and then we'll get right into hearing from our VRs.
Thank you, Michelle. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Leslie Barrett. I am an account specialist with the Operations Support Manager, and it is my distinct honor to enthusiastically welcome you to today's Iowa Effective Practices presentation. If you build it, They will come, field of teams. We have a packed 20-minute presentation for you this afternoon where our three key state partners from Iowa will discuss common goals and collaborative processes that they have built in Iowa to create a field of teams to develop a successful win-win partnership plus strategy for both the state VR agencies and the employment networks in Iowa. Today, you will learn about how their agreement was developed, how state agency coordination occurs, and what post-VR services are provided, including the crucial component of benefits and work incentive planning. At the end of the presentation, we'll be happy to take any questions that you all may have. Without further ado, I'd like to briefly introduce you to each of our speakers today. Our first speaker, Leanne Russo, is a resource manager at Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services, where she's been employed since 1988. Our second speaker, Carrie Osterhaus, is the Vocational Rehabilitation Program Supervisor at the Iowa Department for the Blind, and she brings 13 years of experience to our Partnership Plus model. Then our third speaker, Sheila Stokel, currently works with Iowa Workforce Development on the Disability Employment Initiative through DOL and as Project Coordinator for the Iowa Work Incentive Planning Assistance WIPA Grant through the Social Security Administration, and she brings 33 years of experience to our Partnership Plus model. Today's objective for the presentation, as you can see here, are as follows: to learn how the coordination occurs, to specify post-VR services provided to the beneficiary, and then to highlight growth and results for all of the agencies as well as the beneficiary. Next slide. The map here is just a data map showing where the ENVR workforce activity is located in Iowa. Without a doubt, it's all centered right in the center of the state in Polk County. Next slide. Just a brief snapshot for you of all the data currently occurring in Iowa. For time purposes, I'll just breeze right through this slide, and I'll have Leanne and Carrie take it away with the Iowa VR vision. Carrie and Leanne.
Hi, this is Leanne, and first of all, I want to thank everyone for having the Iowa team on the webinar today. I'll just give a brief bit of historical background so you know that VR, or IVRS, has been in building mode for at least 5 years. The IVRS administrator, David Mitchell, reached out to current ENs in early 2012 because we'd only had three established partnerships with ENs in Iowa. So Administrator Mitchell began to ask all Iowa ENs to consider establishing a Partnership Plus agreement with Iowa VR. His goal was to increase the number of beneficiaries entering the workforce, and that's really the same goal as all 80 state VR agencies, to help people with disabilities become employed. So IVRS reached out to current and potential ENs. Our objective was to expand options for Ticket to Work beneficiaries. We sent letters, we talked at provider meetings, we did some marketing, and we did this knowing that ENs help keep clients engaged and achieve optimal employment. Really, that's everyone's goal. So Iowa Voc Rehab certainly doesn't want people with disabilities to be relegated to a life of poverty. We know that helping a beneficiary get to work helps everyone, and most importantly, the beneficiary themselves. IVRS was encouraged by success in other state VR systems, in addition to federal partners who wanted VRs to address Ticket to Work and Partnership Plus initiatives. There are other federal influences within our work, and that of the Department for Our Blind, which is our sister agency. So, Carrie, I'll talk about that now.
Thanks, Leanne. Last fall, IVRS actually reached out to the Department for the Blind in creating some Partnership Plus agreements. We currently have two in place and hope to increase this number of partnerships as we move forward. In addition to some of the goals that Leanne has talked about, IDB's goals regarding the Partnership Plus agreements is to really ensure that individuals receive benefits counseling and assistance with reporting earnings, as well as ensuring that our clients have follow-along services and supports in place once their VR cases are closed.
And Leanne, again, really this is Iowa's vision, and it's supported far beyond Iowa. I want to talk about the role the Operations Support Manager, OSM, has played to help develop or improve upon the Partnership Plus activities in Iowa. They really are awesome.
And Leslie's been great to work with, Anna Morales, too. Last year, both Anna and Leslie traveled to Iowa to meet with state staff and current and potential EN partners. Prior to that, Leslie facilitated a VR EN partners teleconference, and that was a statewide call to build bridges between Iowa VR and ENs. We discussed issues and talked about successes on that call. And during the call, VR provided updates and reviewed the handoff process to make sure the beneficiary wasn't dropped after their VR file was closed. We also talked about how to improve our processes, so we're always interested in that. I do want to acknowledge that awesome staff provide almost immediate answers to questions or concerns or roadblocks. So Leslie is great. She's been a great support and provides assistance to all stakeholders, state agencies, and partners alike. In my role as VR's ticket coordinator, I help establish Partnership Plus agreements. We have a memorandum of understanding, and we can complete that within a month for an interested party. We do market Partnership Plus and Ticket to Work activities. I help develop forms, help with tracking. We've had 91 handoffs between last October and the end of March. We get our websites maintained within our system, and I also help develop staff processes. To reiterate, Iowa VR wants to be an active and responsive partner to ENs in Iowa. Our goals going forward are to increase VR to EN handoffs, to increase ticket assignments, and increase ticket payments. I mentioned the Recruitment and Partnership Plus Roundtable that Awesome VR and Workforce and EN partners participated in last year. This has probably been the most valuable piece I'd like you to take away from today's conversation. Bringing all partners together in this two-day event resulted in a meeting that was very well attended. It helped Iowa Voc Rehab increase from 6 Partnership Plus partners to 12 within 1 year. Leslie provided tangible on-site step-by-step training on completing an RFQ and the walkthrough process on becoming an EN. Awesome provided updates from SSA, talked about available technical assistance and support, and really helped build collaboration and momentum in Iowa. Okay, I'm on this next slide, this one that's currently on. Within our current system, Iowa Voc Rehab now ensures that every beneficiary coming to our system receives benefit planning services. We've trained internal staff in the finer nuances of benefit planning counseling and also have access to other entities when a case is too complex for us to assist with. Iowa has an active financial team that supports field staff and helps our Ticket to Work initiative. When I say it takes a team, it really takes a team. Voc Rehab benefited from ongoing conversations supported by Awesome with current and potential partners. I mentioned we've expanded our pool of ENs and now have 13. And this is a great pool that VR candidates can access once their file is closed. One of the selling points for a Partnership Plus agreement and having a job candidate continue working with an EN partner is that it protects the beneficiary from the continuing disability review and provides a variety of support services, some of which include follow-along, benefits counseling, communication with Social Security, ongoing support, job coaching, transportation, and even education and training. I won't tell you what SSA has to say about Partnership Plus, but I will just truly conclude by saying it's a win-win-win for VR, the EN, and beneficiaries. All right, next slide. I mentioned the 13 current partners that Iowa Voc Rehab has. We appreciate each and every one of them. They help make the process as seamless as possible for a beneficiary. As far as data goes, you can see the closure numbers and individual ticket holders have both increased since we really began to address and enhance VR processes for beneficiaries. We want these numbers to continue to grow and are always interested in refining our processes for the benefit of a job candidate. As a note, 147 of the 2205 successful closures in fiscal year 14 who were SSI or DI beneficiaries achieved substantial gainful activity. And in Iowa, we strive to approach this as a partnership versus a competition. What we've built requires us to keep in mind the following, that we can't do this alone. We must make our processes easy for all parties, especially the beneficiary. And once you establish a good foundation that's built on partnership and not competition, if you build it, they will come. Right, Sheila?
Yes. Excellent. Thank you, partner.
Well, our workforce development has been an important network.
Sheila, I'm sorry, this is Leslie. Do you think you could speak up a little bit? I'm having trouble hearing.
Sure.
Thank you.
Iowa Workforce Development has been an EN since 2007. We started with one workforce center in Mason City, Iowa, and then Decorah, Iowa. And then we decided this was a good option for every workforce center. So we formed a state employment network that involves all the other offices except for now there's three that have become their own EN. So we've grown over the years on what we do. You can get all the services through the employment network that you would get through a regular workforce office or a one-stop. We provide the job search, job matching, on-the-job support, continued ed classes, and computer classes, plus, you know, anything else. Some of our workforce centers, well, almost all of them tailor some of the classes that they're offering according to what the business needs are in the community. One of our key services that we've implemented since the Disability Employment Initiative is the Disability Resource Coordinator. So we have five pilot offices out of 16 that have these resource coordinators. That's the disability subject matter expert that's housed in the office. Not only are they there to assist customers with disabilities, but they're there to teach staff, to role model how these coaches are with people with disability and what specific needs that they have, such as accommodations. All those disability resource coordinators are certified benefits planners. So it really makes it nice, too, because we have a good relationship with the WIPA, but there's just not enough of them. The WIPA is the Work Incentive Planning and Assistance Project from Social Security. There's just not enough of them to go around the state, so it really helps have those five pilot offices for them to also tap into services. Why do we use Partnership Plus? Beneficiaries can receive follow-up services if somebody is, you know, going to assign their ticket to the Workforce EN or any other EN. We know that they're going to get follow-up services to help with their success. By giving those follow-up services, it helps people sustain their jobs for longer. IWD maintains, improves accessibility. So we can help that individual with any accessibility needs that they may have. The ticket to work income, I think a lot of people kind of shy away from how that income improves their services, but we kind of take that on as a good way for us to improve our services by becoming more accessible, being able to buy things like the big screen computer, you know, computer screens and other items that they may need. IWB assists IDRS with their waitlist beneficiaries. Yes, when people go maybe on the waitlist through vocational rehabilitation, VR gives them our information as one of the ENs that they have access to. And we can help by providing that job search, that resume. We can help them possibly get a job before they even get to need VR services. We still refer back to VR if they need services beyond our help and maybe they've gotten off the wait list now. And so what we do is we assign them to get back to vocational rehabilitation. It's not a competition. It's what works best for the individual. As far as marketing strategies, You know, it used to be when people got their ticket in the mail, we had people coming in at our door saying, Social Security tells me that you can get me a job, or, you know, that I'm entitled to a job, or I can't get fired, or anything like that. So it was kind of nice when they came in, because we could explain the rules to them and what the ticket really meant. Over the years where they didn't mail out the tickets, we had to resort to more marketing for people to come indoors. We did posters. We had, like, large TV screens in our lobby, so we put information on there, and we still do. We did a lot of presentations around the state, and it amazes me how many people, even though the ticket has been around so long, still don't know about it and have a lot of questions. And people at those presentations used to get teary-eyed and get upset because they didn't know they could work and still maintain their benefit. So we did have to resort to some of those kind of marketing strategies, and we still do a lot of those, just again, because people don't know what's available. Next slide.
I'll talk about some of the changes within Volk Rehab now. One of them was that we developed here was to ensure a beneficiary is provided with ongoing benefit planning services once a person has a job. So the IDRS counselor acquaints them with an EM partner, and again, we've got 13 under the partnership plus agreements. Staff are using a cheat sheet to make sure they follow the process laid out to inform a job candidate about ongoing support, and that's specific to the different statuses within the Volk Rehab system. We also want to ensure that this happens, so our VR data person sends out a tickler to every Volk Rehab counselor once their status change shows the job candidate is working. Volk Rehab provides informational materials to internal staff and external partners about Ticket to Work, which can be found on our website, so any of the materials we're willing to share with other states. Prior to closure, Iowa VR staff help coordinate the handoff process to the selected EN that the job candidate wants. This can involve a phone call to introduce the job candidate to their EN of choice and make a connection for them with the person that they'll eventually be working with. So finally, to help cement Volk Rehab's commitment to benefits planning, IDRS counselors are evaluated on their delivery of benefit planning services. So this is written into their performance plans. Next. I'm pretty sure everyone on the call knows that a VR agency is an employment network, and a ticket's put in use by VR when serving an SSI or DI beneficiary. Of course, assigning a ticket is not mandatory, but it does allow agencies to be reimbursed for funds expended and thus helps our agency serve more clientele. For EMs already working with the individual, DR has it written into our Partnership Plus agreements that the EM will unassign the ticket in order for VR to put it in use. Even so, you can see there's plenty of tickets to go around in Iowa, and I imagine that's true in the other states too. There are over 100,000 ticket holders here, and I believe Rob said there were 13.7 million beneficiaries in the U.S. Whew. 120 EINs are listed on the SSA Ticket to Work website, many of which are out of the state of Iowa. Right now, Volk Rehab is serving 12,500 job candidates, over 3,000 of whom are ticket holders. For Partnership Plus EIN working with Volk Rehab, VR takes the Phase 1 milestones, which leaves Phase 2 and the outcomes available to an EIN partner. So the most encouraging statistic I'll share is this, that over 40% of ticket holders want to work. I have to give Volk Rehab's administrator and our bureau chief a lot of credit for setting the tone and expectation that our staff are going to become well-versed in benefit planning services. I also want to acknowledge the 18 staff that VR has trained as benefit planners. That's more than one for every office within the state. And I'll share perspectives from two of these talented staff. Lynette's a Volk Rehab counselor at a state university, and here's her story. In 2014, three Iowa State students got off benefits due to their teaching jobs, and two more this year. Here are examples of five others able to leave the benefit system. A software engineer earning over $4,100 a month, a landscape designer earning over $2,100 a month, a youth counselor earning over $19 a month, an assembler earning $2,184 a month, and a production worker earning $2,253 a month. So Lynette also indicates she works with individuals who want to continue benefits, and one of which is a cashier at Walmart earning $780 a month and a home health aide earning about $800 a month. But Lynette also shared this story. I have a good example of a PASS plan person whose goal would not be achievable without the PASS. She's working part-time while in school but won't be closed for some time due to getting an education. I write 3 to 4 PASS plans a year with students, but this is different to me because of the significant progress she's made and the difference the PASS has made in her ability to progress. Her PASS is written to cover her car payment, her car insurance and registration, and help with tuition. When I met her 2 years ago, she had poor hygiene, struggled with completing classes, and a history of losing jobs after a few weeks. Once she had the PASS, she was comfortable trying work, knowing she would have SSI to fall back on if she lost a job. She's maintained the same part-time job ever since, almost 2 years. Her job is also good experience for her career goal. She's worked hard on managing hygiene and personal issues and made great progress with these. While she continues to work on disability management and building personal strategies for success, she's gaining work experience and earning credits to continue on to her grad school. The plan is for her to get a part-time job out of grad school, and she'll still earn enough to go off benefits, gradually increase her hours until she's either working full-time or working as much as possible for her. Without the PASS, she may not have obtained her current part-time job, which is key, both in building her work experience and her confidence in herself. It's been helpful for her to see that she can achieve her current goal and move out of poverty. Another benefit planner out of Waterloo, Jody, writes, I've learned a lot from being a benefit planner, and I feel we are doing such a great service to the job candidates that we provide benefit planning to. There are times we may not have the answers. However, it's come to a point where we're able to feel comfortable with reaching out and contacting others who may be of assistance. Even though it's a lot of work, it's really great that our agency has decided to move forward with having benefit planners in each office. It's better for the individual that we serve, and we are there along with them to be part of their journey into employment. So finally, I want to acknowledge all the beneficiaries who are exploring options to go to work. I know it takes a lot of guts to even consider this, but individuals need to know that each VR agency should be ready, willing, and able to help. So thank you all very much. Next.
Hi, Leanne. Thank you so much. Actually, we're going to skip over resources, and I just want to make sure that I leave everyone's contact information up there. We actually had a really great question come in from the chat, and then we can certainly open up the line for further questions. The question that came in on slide 10, Iowa VR to EN coordination, was regarding the annual ticket holders exiting IVRS with a successful case closure. They want to know, at slide 10, how many of those successful case closures were handed to employment networks?
Well, within the past year, 91 had been handed off of the 2,200. Our numbers change, and we really have just implemented staff handoffs within the past year and a half. So staff are slowly becoming adjusted to making handoffs, and we've increased our EN pool, so this allows a lot of client choice within our system. But, of course, we don't make an individual work with an EN unless they want to either.
Thank you, Leah. Are there any other chat questions for our presenters? No? All right. There is a second question. Okay, second question for you. Go ahead, James.
What resource did you use to assist your staff in becoming certified or educated in becoming benefits planners for your clients?
We use TACE, the Technical Assistance Center, that was available to us in 2013, and then we had some follow-up. We archived those webinars, and then we had 2 on-site visits for 4 days each from TACE staff. We're currently exploring using BCU for ongoing training and support, as well as possibly APSE. So we're continuing to want staff to be trained and to be updated in Ticket to Work and other SSA initiatives.
Okay, thank you. Hold on. We're just going to go to the phone. Operator, would you open the phone line for our callers?
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question is from the line of Gina Haupt.
Hi, Gina. Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll actually withdraw because mine's not with the partnership box. So.
Okay. But hold on. We may come back. We'll open the lines for a few other questions on the ticket portal because I know the chat line is full of those questions, and we do appreciate all of you writing your questions down because we will be sending those over to the VR help desk. Operator, do we have another question for our Partnership Plus call?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. You do have a question from the line of Noreen Rocco.
Hi, Noreen. Do you have a question for our speaker?
Hi. No, thank you for taking my call. It's actually not a question. I just wanted to add my support for the OSM. We've just recently completed an Ian recruitment event here in Utah just not even quite a month ago. And since that time, we've already had 5 new submissions for Employment Networks for the Partnership Plus. So it's really great. I just want to encourage everyone to work closely with the OSM and Melissa Stipe and Roger, came out, and also Charlene. So it was really helpful to us. And I'm a new ticket coordinator in the state of Utah, so it was just great help to get that off the ground for our state.
Noreen, thank you for calling in and sharing your update. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay. Operator, do we have another? I'll take one more for the speakers, and then we'll go back to the ticket portal.
There are no questions at this time.
Okay. Alyssa, do you have any just closing comments, and then we'll go back to the ticket portal?
I do, Michelle. Thank you. I just want to say a very wholehearted thank you to our 3 speakers today. It's been a real treat to work with you all in Iowa, and keep up the good work. And thank you so much for being a part of our call today. It was very helpful information for anyone looking to strengthen their Partnership Plus model in their own state.
Thank you, Leslie, and thank you again to our Iowa team. The ticket portal, I know that we have, as I said, received several questions on our chat line. This will be very helpful for us to address these questions or give our team time to go back, look at our ticket portal guide, and address those questions with more detail. Again, we're going to open the phone line, but at this time, please keep in mind this is many of these processes are in testing, and we are working through many of the processes, but we do want to hear what your questions are and your concerns so we can come next month with additional information. Operator, do you want to open? We'll take 3 more questions, and then we'll conclude our call for today. Katie, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Operator, do you want to open up the phone line?
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
Operator, do we still have Gina on the line? From Wisconsin?
Gina, please press star 1. Okay, Gina, your line is open.
Okay, great. Gina?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to express my same concerns that David had, and I won't go too far into that, but you know, our state submits a lot, and we currently use MOVEit, but to have to manually go through and identify which ones would have to have the dates changed, that concerns me. Also, having the CDR protection for the consumers concern me, because if I miss any, then they don't get their CDR protection, and for me, that's a big concern for our consumers, so I just wanted to express that. Then also, I noticed in the presentation, and you guys didn't touch on it, there's going to be the leading zeros are going to be taken off, and so I was hoping you could touch on that either this time or next time because that's going to be a programming change for our programmers that I'm going to need to take back to them. And then also the, I believe it's the code 0 being added, that's also going to be a programming change. That's going to have to get added in, and since we program our own case management system and everything's fed in, I'm going to need to sort of know a little more about that to take to them and how that's going to talk back and forth to our system. And then I couldn't hear what code you said. I know you said the TXT is not going to be there, but what are we to change the ending to?
Okay, hi, this is Katie. So the file extension of the file that you upload needs to end in CSV, which stands for the limited file. It's one of the choices in many programs. You have a save as option. You can save it as a CSV. But if you're already producing them as text files, you can just change the file name to a different extension.
Yeah, so it's the eliminated file. Okay. And like I said, I have my email address out there. I'm here to work with you and help you, my little team here, and we will get you working with the changes and give you all the specifications you need to change your programming. Okay, so just contact me and I will help you. Okay, and can you post our address on the chat line because you sort of went with it fast?
Yes, we'll repost that on the chat line, and we'll go ahead and send out just the email by email too, because I know not everyone on our call today is on the chat line, so we want to make that available to everyone. But Gina, you gave me a list of about 4 items. Do you still want to still submit your questions so we can make sure, again, even if we get a duplicate comments, we can just filter them, but make sure that we're capturing the concerns of the callers.
They're actually submitted.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And at this time, there are no further questions.
Oh, all right. Okay, so I know there are questions out there. We see the question. Actually, James does have a question he wants to share. James?
Where does this is from Donna Osborne. Where does the information, where does the earnings information on the portal come from?
From Social Security earnings records.
Okay, do we have another question? No? Okay. Any closing remarks from our speakers from Social Security Administration? I think you're on mute. Just want to double check. Regina or Danielle or Katie, any closing remarks?
Oh, yes. I just wanted to thank everyone for joining the call today. And the other thing is that we are commencing to have a quarterly EN payment call. Nate Arno, and I don't know if Nate's still on the phone, but he's going to set up those calls.
I'm sorry, not EN. I'm sorry. It's VR. VR payment calls,
similar to the EN payment calls. And on those calls, we'll be able to address payment concerns and questions and go into more detail and address specifics. So I know that some of the questions that they had today maybe were not answered in full, but again, as you said, they can send in the questions, and our help desk will provide an answer, and we will get back, we will address all of their concerns. So thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you, Regina. And I do want to mention for those 14 state VR agencies that act as an EN, our quarterly VR EN call is scheduled for Wednesday, July the 29th at 3 o'clock. And so we will be covering those issues related to VR ENs. Again, we will send out an agenda and announcement later this week or probably early next week, but I just wanted to put that on your radar if you are VR EN. That's Wednesday, July the 29th at 3 o'clock. And as I said, we will do a follow-up to many of the comments and questions we received today on the August call. Thank you for joining us, and that concludes our call for today. Have a good day, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude today's conference call. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.